Now, Dan, last time you were here, we talked in some detail about Lifetime Asset Trusts, which I recall are basically designed as some kind of deposit box which allows you to ring-fence your assets for up to 125 years. And today you're going to be turning your attention to powers of attorney, is that right?
Absolutely, Scott, yes.
Now, as we said before, there are so many variables involved that my advice, as always, is that if you have any particular issues, your best option is to call the guys at Affinity, who will gladly arrange to come and have a chat and provide you with options best suited to your personal circumstances, and we'll give you the number a little bit later on. So first off, I've got to ask you what a power of attorney does that an asset trust can't do, and if I already have an asset trust, why might I need to establish a power of attorney, and what indeed is a power of attorney?
Well, the two things are entirely different things, Scott. A power of attorney is a document which allows you to appoint somebody called an attorney to make decisions on your behalf if for some reason you're unable to make those decisions. And that could be something simple, such as you being out of the country, you could be housebound, or a more serious level if you've lost mental capacity. And an attorney that's been appointed must be somebody who's over 18 years of age and mustn't be bankrupt. But above all, it must be someone that you trust completely.
Absolutely. I can tell you one thing. My wife has said she'd never let me be appointed to her power of attorney because she said I'd put her in a home. So you just have to, a document drawn up appointing someone as your attorney. Is that it? And you're covered?
Well, as ever, it's not quite as simple as that because there is more than one type of power of attorney.
There's a surprise. So how many are there?
Well, at the moment, there are four. I say at the moment. We don't expect that to change.
Why so many?
Well, partly because they give authority to do different things and make different decisions, and partly because of the introduction in 2007 of the Mental Capacity Act.
Right, okay. So what are the key differences?
Well, if we start at the beginning, you've got something called a general power of attorney. It's a basic power, and a general power of attorney has its place, but it also has its limitations. It's limited in the first instance because it only lasts for 12 months after it's been set up. And it's limited insofar as it can only be used whilst the donor, that's the person giving the power, has mental capacity. So this is the one that would be used if you are, for example, out of the country for an extended period or if you're housebound. It can't be used when you've lost mental capacity. Until 2007, there used to be something called an enduring power of attorney, or an EPA, which gave the attorneys authority to dispose of property, deal with financial affairs, sign documents, make purchases, and also to make gifts. The EPA doesn't give authority to the attorney to make substantial or unusual gifts or to make decisions about personal care or welfare matters. And the EPA, as we affectionately call it, if you have one of those and it was signed prior to the 30th of September 2007, that document can still be registered and used, but in 2007 it was replaced by a couple of new forms.
Wonderful. All right. Which are?
Well, these are called lasting powers of attorney. The one that directly replaced the EPA was the lasting power of attorney for property and financial affairs. And that allows for decisions to be made on financial and property-related matters. But it can only be used for people, can also be used for people with business interests. Then you've got a lasting power of attorney for health and welfare, which, as the name implies, covers everything from what you wear, what you eat and drink, your medication, your medical treatment, and even where you live. So if care is required, your attorneys using this document have significant input as to where you are cared for. And this, some people would argue, is the most important decision that can be made with this document. This could be whether you're looked after in your own home, mm-hmm. or if residential care is needed, which care home that care would be provided at. The document also empowers your attorneys to give or refuse consent to life-sustaining treatment.
I can see why you need to make sure you trust somebody.
Absolutely, yes.
So what happens if I don't have a power of attorney in place and I lose that capacity? And actually, I just want to also catch on this thing about, I think it also talks about if you have a stroke. But there are strokes and there are strokes, aren't there? I mean, some people have a stroke and they're fine afterwards. So presumably they don't have a problem until they have a real stroke.
No, really, a lasting power of attorney comes into its own when people do lose the mental capacity to make their own decisions. If it's a physical incapacity, then obviously they can still go down to the bank and do your running around using a general power of attorney. But the lasting power of attorney is all about having lost mental capacity.
Yes.
Now, your question was what happens if you don't have a power of attorney in place,
yep.
and you lose capacity. And in 2007, the default position for this, for financial and property matters, was basically made to be the official solicitor. That's a government-appointed person to make your decisions. And for health and welfare matters, then the default position is a mental capacity advocate, and that would usually be a trained social worker.
Mm.
They do provide a facility for a family member to make an application for a court order to become what is known as a court-appointed deputy. But in that process, there's now no guarantee that an application would be successful. And in fact, the statistics are quite frightening, Scott. As low as 62% of applications for financial deputyship and only 23% of applications for health and welfare deputyship are granted. That process is also very costly. On average, a couple of £1,000 in sort of legal fees, insurance bonds, medical assessments. There's a whole plethora of red tape as a burden to go through. And that procedure can take anything from 6 to 12 months at a very traumatic time.
So really, that is something you really do want to avoid at all costs.
That would be my opinion, yes.
Right now I'm talking with Dan Atfield from Affinity about lasting powers of attorney. Now, we were just talking about the basic powers of attorney, etc. But bearing in mind that the general basic power of attorney is very limited in its scope, it would appear that the lasting power of attorney would be the best option from what you just said. But from what you just said, you'd really need to take out both the one covering the property and the one covering the health issues, would you not?
Well, it's a good question, and I think it's fair to say that each case needs to be judged on its own merits. But generally speaking, if you accept there's a risk you could lose capacity, then the sensible thing to do is to put both powers of attorney in place as soon as possible, and I would recommend that they be registered straight away as well. But that's why we recommend people to talk through their individual circumstances with us, so that we can discuss and make recommendations on the best available options for them, for their circumstances.
I mean, what sort of costs are we talking about in drawing up all of these powers of attorney? And with bearing in mind, you've also, when we talked about the other thing, the lifetime asset trusts, which were quite pricey, I just wonder how all of this pulls together.
You always ask me that one, don't you?
I do. I'm a nasty piece of work. Always bowling fastballs with topspin. You're not expecting.
Well, as ever, there are a number of variables, Scott. So if you were to simply draw up a power of attorney on an unregistered basis, then the cost is going to be somewhere between £250 and £300.
For each one?
For each one, yes.
But at least we're not talking thousands here.
Oh, no, we're not talking thousands. If you decide to register the document, then that would have an additional cost, not least because the court incurs of an application fee. So the government want their slice when the document is registered.
They get you one way or another.
They do indeed. Yeah. And the cost of registration varies depending on your individual circumstances, your income, whether you're on benefits. So it can range from £0 to £110 to register each document. So the cost can vary.
Right, okay. Now, would a living will be an option that you could use instead?
Well, a living will is certainly an option. I wouldn't say that it's an alternative to lasting powers of attorney. The element that the living will replaces, really, is, you remember when we spoke about the health and welfare power of attorney, there's an element within that that makes or gives your attorneys the power to make decisions on life-sustaining treatment.
Yeah.
The living will really replaces that element of the health and welfare power, so it's an addition to the lasting power of attorney.
So it's an addition rather than a substitution.
Absolutely.
Is it a cheaper one?
It is much cheaper. Yeah, very low cost thing to do.
You couldn't have that without the other.
Not really. No. The two really do go hand in glove. Okay, because the living will is a document which allows you to give directions about your medical treatment in advance, and it's used when you're in a position and you're unable to communicate those directions. For example, if you're on a life support machine. So you may say that you want to be allowed to slip away if you're on a life support machine, if you're unable to communicate your wishes and you're in a situation where you're going to be in a persistent vegetative state. That's probably a good example of where a living will comes into its own.
What sort of cost do you get on a living will?
£125 for a living will.
Does that have to be registered as well?
Well, there's no official register for living wills, but it would normally be kept with your medical records at the hospital that holds your notes and also with your GP.
But say, for example, I took out a living will before I was in a hospital or anything like that. So it wouldn't go to a hospital then, it would just go with medical notes, would it?
Well, when they're drawn up and they're signed and witnessed, and they are signed and witnessed in the same way as an ordinary will is signed and witnessed, then we normally produce three identical versions of a living will. So you would normally, once it's signed, you would give one to your GP and also send one to the hospital that holds your notes. In the old days, pre-technology days, they would remain physically in your notes. Nowadays, of course, they will all be scanned onto a computer somewhere and kept in a cloud, I'm sure, so that they're easily accessible. Easily accessible to the medical powers that be if they're ever faced with that situation.
I have to say that I'm always a bit wary and sceptical of these things. I was told to go and see the doctor the other day, and I went down there, and she said, well, how can I help you? I said, well, I don't know. I said, I've been told to come and see you. She said, well, nobody's told me. I said, well, it must be on the record somewhere.
We often tease when we're signing a health and welfare power of attorney, and people have to select sort of whether or not they would want to give their attorneys the power to give or refuse consent to life-sustaining treatment. I generally will point to option A and say, this is the one that allows your attorneys to get their inheritance early.
And Dan Atfield from Affinity has been outlining some of the issues connected with lasting powers of attorney. And we've got a fastball with topspin for him now. We're just trying to find out, if you've already got this lasting power of attorney, Is there any way you can change something and add attorneys in, take them out, or add anything into it, change it in any way once it's there?
There's more than one question there, isn't there? So that is a top spin curveball. Right, well, to answer that, obviously there's more than one answer because there'd be more than one question.
Yes.
But let's look at one or two examples. If you've drawn up a lasting power of attorney and it hasn't yet been registered at the court,
right,
then of course it's very straightforward to revoke that document and replace it with a revised version, which could either have the original attorney's rearranged, shall we say, like some can be added or some can be removed. If the document has already been registered at the Office of the Public Guardian, it's not quite so straightforward to add somebody. You would need to revoke the original document in its entirety and re-register a revised document. That's if you want to add an attorney. If you want to remove an attorney, so let's say you've appointed your two sons and your daughter, for example, and you fall out with one of the sons there and you want to remove that son, then it's possible to submit what they call a partial revocation. So you can remove somebody from an existing registered power of attorney.
And what would happen if one of those people had already died?
Then the appointment, it depends on how the appointment has been made, but if they are appointed on a joint and several basis, which is the most flexible way to appoint people, then the power just stands with the remaining attorneys.
Oh, I see.
So death of an attorney is not necessarily a big problem. It would be if they were appointed jointly, but that's an uncommon way of appointing attorneys.
Why would you?
Well, you know, we talked earlier about only selecting attorneys that you trust.
Mm.
Somebody who perhaps doesn't trust an attorney to act alone would want all the decisions made jointly and every piece of paper signed by every attorney.
Ah, gotcha.
It's not very practical in the vast majority of cases, but as I said earlier, each case needs to be judged on its own merits.
Mm.
If I can just expand that question just a little further, you've asked me the question aimed at changing attorneys in a lasting power of attorney, but of course it's a if you've got an old style enduring power of attorney, then of course you can no longer edit or replace that document.
Ah.
Because it was made redundant, as it were, on the 30th of September 2007. So if you want to change the attorneys, add or remove attorneys in an old enduring power of attorney, then the option is to replace it with the up-to-date model, the lasting power of attorney.
Which means you've got to take two. With the original one, there was only one power of attorney. Now you've got to take out two. Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to say you have to take out two, because don't forget that they are standalone documents in their own right. And so it's people's choice, Scott. If you only want to have a financial power of attorney in place, you can do that. It's recommended to have both, but it's not compulsory to have both.
Right, okay, fair enough. I understand all of that. Right, it's still very complicated, all of this. I had no idea there was so much complexity about making a will, I must say. But there you are. Well, look, thanks very much once again. But as we said right at the outset, there are so many variables available. In a programme like this, we can but scratch the surface. So my advice to you is always to pick up the phone and call the guys at Affinity, who will be delighted to give you a free consultation in your own home, where you'll be able to talk through your particular circumstances and sort something out which is tailor-made to your requirements. The number is 01245 850000. That number again, 01245, Chelmsford number, 850000. 00. Now somebody's going to be with us again on the 13th of March. I think you're not going to be here, are you?
No, I'm going to be run ragged by 5 grandchildren in Disney in 2 weeks' time. So I'm going to be soaking up the sunshine, hopefully. That's going to be Nick.
Right.
Nick, obviously, we've all heard from Nick already. He's very capable. And I think we're going to select a subject for Nick, aren't we?
I think so. So what are you going to select for him? You can bowl the fastball with topspin this time.
Well, we've been talking on and off, haven't we, off air, about challenges to wheels,
yep.
the increase over the recent years in wheels being challenged. And I think that would be a topic to cover. It's not very technical, which is good, and we can give...
Doesn't need to be technical with me.
No, absolutely, yeah. You said that, not me. But it means that we can give some rather interesting examples of wheels that have been challenged in recent years.
Good stuff. All right, well, we'll look forward to that. Thanks very much indeed.